Nearly a dozen South African National Defence Force soldiers have died in the Democratic Republic of Congo this year. We speak to retired Colonel Chris Wyatt, the former director of African Studies at the U.S. Army War College. Welcome, Colonel.
Well, thank you, Chris. It's a pleasure to be back. And what an interesting topic once again. I really appreciate the topics you keep asking me to talk about. They're all fascinating. And this one, talking about the South African National Defence Force in the Democratic Republic of Congo, I think is a timely topic to discuss.
Well, I would like to know, as I'm sure you have a very good idea, what is South Africa really doing there? Why is it in South Africa's interest to be there?
Well, it's a fair question. Why is South Africa in the DRC? Now, I'm not going to say this is the case, but I'm going to give an example why others have been there just to frame this. So we go back to when the government in the 1990s was overthrown with a movement coming out of the East. They moved across the country, Kabila. Laurent Kabila came across, and there was all kinds of devastation. He took over, overthrew the government, and became in charge of the Democratic Republic of Congo, a country that's not democratic. It's not really a republic, but it is the Congo. We'll give it that. He took over, and then the conflict after Rwanda's genocide, what had happened is that spilled over and stayed in the east, in Kivu in particular, but that part of the eastern part of the country. And that conflict was fueled for a long time. So we wound up getting a bunch of different countries that sent military deployments there, like Namibia. Namibia sent troops to the Congo. Zimbabwe sent troops to the Congo and others. But those two in particular, the reason they sent troops there wasn't to stabilize the government, although that was the claim. The real reason they were there is that they were profiting from it. It was profiteering. The Namibian Defense Force, the Zimbabwe Defense Force were deeply involved in the illicit extraction of minerals and diamonds and other things and making a fortune of it. And that, frankly, in the waning years of his later years of his time, 37 years in power in Zimbabwe, that's how Mugabe was paying off his generals to keep them content and prevent what eventually became a bloodless coup in 2017 when he was pushed aside. But in the years before that, there was no money left because ZANU-PF had pilfered the country and they couldn't even pay soldiers salaries. So one way to take care of it was to let them go to the Congo, ostensibly for peacekeeping, but really for pilfering of minerals. And Namibia did the exact same thing. Now, I'm not making any claim the South Africans are doing that. I don't believe that's what's going on. There is, and there has been throughout the history of South African National Defense Force, SANDF troops in the Congo, incidences of criminal activity, soldiers selling their weapons, soldiers running prostitution rings, human slavery, things like that, selling uniforms, selling the rations and things like that meant for troops to local guerrillas and others. That does take place. And that, unfortunately, that does take place with a lot of militaries on so-called peacekeeping missions, which really are less about peace and more about presence. But the South African National Defense Force has a long history in the DRC. They've been there for two decades. And the question is why? And then we had two United Nations missions. We had MONUC, we had MINUSCO. And after two plus decades of United Nations participation in the Eastern Congo, there isn't peace. In fact, it's just as deadly as it's been for the past two decades. So those forces have been withdrawing this year. Last year in December, the Southern African Development Community said, hey, we're going to send a mission. Of course, South Africa is a major player in SADC. So they decided to send 5,000 troops from SADC to replace 20,000 troops from the UN. I'm not good at math, but I think that's a ratio of 4-1 in the wrong direction. Maybe you should have sent 80,000 troops from somewhere instead of 5,000. But 5,000 troops, the commitment from South Africa is 2,900. To my knowledge, they haven't achieved that yet in no small measure because the SANDF is overcommitted. They have responsibilities all over, from guarding ESCOM facilities against sabotage. That's not a job for the military, but that's something they've been doing, to also being involved in the election, playing a role there. That's not something the military is supposed to be doing, elections. That's pretty crazy. And then, of course, a mission that's often overlooked. And I don't know the current status of it because the opaque nature of the Department of Defense in South Africa, they aren't forthcoming in this publicly the way they used to be. But traditionally, South Africa's army has had up to 7 rifle companies patrolling the border with Zimbabwe, Mozambique, and Swaziland, or Eswatini, to deter illegal immigration. But with the vast influx of illegal immigrants, you have to wonder if they're even on the border anymore. And when you have 7 companies of infantry on the border, you have to realize, and in a proper military, that means you have 21 companies engaged because 7 companies are on operations, 7 companies are rehearsing, preparing, getting ready, and moving to the location, and 7 are in rest on holiday, taking a break, that sort of thing. So that's a huge commitment from the infantry battalions from South Africa. With 3 companies per battalion, That's a lot of battalions. I don't know that they're doing that at this point, but the point is that the South African National Defense Force is overstretched, overburdened, under-resourced, and, well, we'll get into this in a moment, but they don't even have the resources to do what they're being tasked to do in the Congo. So your comment earlier, if you use the word slaughter, I think you said slaughter. If you didn't, I'll use the word slaughter. They're like lambs sent to the slaughter. They're being sent there with insufficient resources, improper medevac, no air support, insufficient logistics. The South African government has to pay contractors to fly Russian aircraft to send resources up there. It's something that South Africa should not be involved in, but it's all part of the egotistical foreign policy of the African National Congress, all started by Nelson Mandela, you know, interfering in other African countries' business. Of course, they have no problem complaining about America or China or someone else interfering in African countries' business. But South Africa has its nose everywhere. Cote d'Ivoire, Ethiopia, Eritrea, Sudan, Uganda, Burundi, DRC, the list goes on and on, the Central African Republic. So yeah, it's why are they there? And I guess we get to that in a second here. I'll give you a chance to get back in here. It's your program. But why are they there? What's the squeeze? What's the juice you're getting for the squeeze? And I don't think South Africa's getting much.
I was going to ask you that. What is the cost versus the gain of South Africa's involvement there? They must be getting something.
Well, that's the only thing I could possibly see they're getting. I mean, I'm not going to make the accusation of getting anything like minerals because I don't see any evidence of that, but I have seen with others in the past. The only thing I could possibly see is the ANC puffs their chests up like they're world actors and they're powerful players on the African stage. But South Africa really irritates most other African countries. Chris, I've lived all over the continent. I've dealt with Africans in West Africa, North Africa, East Africa, Central Africa, Southern Africa, lived in all these places, including working at the African Union. And that was the last assignment I had in Africa in uniform, was the African Union. And at the African Union, my experience was that most Africans from other countries were not happy about South Africa. Remember, this was the time that the South Africans broke the mold about the secretary for the African Union. The OAU and the African Union traditionally had always been not a regional hegemon. Never Nigeria, never Algeria, never Kenya, never South Africa. All the way up until Nkosi Zanamidala Mzuma was forced on the African Union. And she went up there. And her arrogance and the distaste people had for her was pretty palpable when I was in Addis Ababa. She was less popular than syphilis. I mean, that's how bad things were in Addis. She was never invited to anything unless they were forced to invite her for official purposes. But, you know, South Africa has really irritated a lot of people across the continent. They're always sticking their nose everywhere. So what are they getting out of this? It's a good question. They're not getting minerals. So it's just got to be the self-fulfilling prophecy of the ANC that we're important, we matter, that DRC matters. Look, make no mistake, the conflict in DRC is horrendous, but it's decades old. And you're replacing 20,000 UN troops with proper equipment in many cases with South African troops, Malawian troops, who work really hard, by the way. And who's the other one? It's the third country that's sent. Tanzania is also sending troops. And they have decent military too. They're sending them there with only 5,000 total, and they're not even at full strength now. And they're only there on a short-term basis. They're supposed to withdraw by December. Well, the Congo is not going to be the land of milk and honey in December. That's not going to end the conflict there. So what's the purpose of it? It's a stopgap measure because the East African community has withdrawn their forces. The UN has been asked to leave, and the UN Security Council said, fine, we've had enough after 2 decades. So it doesn't make any sense. With the withdrawal of the EAC and the handoff to SADC, which has gone very poorly, and on top of that, the United Nations pulling out at the same time, the South African force is going to find itself increasingly vulnerable to M23 and about 100 other rebel groups who have all their own agendas, and most of it's criminal. It's not a good look. It's not a good thing. And lives are being wasted unnecessarily, not just South African lives, but civilian lives here, because the South Africans have been accused of targeting civilians in one of the attacks about 30 kilometers from Goma earlier this year. It's a real mess, and I don't see what they get out of it. It's not just a human cost. I mean, the South African government is budgeted over 2 billion rand for this operation, and they will spend over 900 million rand in the 6 months ending December. So I really don't see what they're getting out of it. It's not in the interest of South Africans. How does it further your interest home? You've got kids in school who don't have textbooks, who are using pit latrines. You've got a mess in South Africa. You know, it's time to focus on South Africa. Make South Africa great again, or for once, or first, whatever the case is, but make South Africa great. Let the DRC be handled. This is, in my view, Chris, this is a joke by SADC. SADC has had a number of interventions in the past, and this might be the motivation why South Africa is doing it. They've had a number of interventions in Comoros. They've gone there repeatedly. They went into Lesotho back in the 1990s in Operation Boleas. That didn't go particularly well for the South African force, but it was new then after they amalgamated all the forces. And so, you know, they've done a few of these interventions, and some of them gone well. And so maybe SADC thinks it actually has some capability to pull this off. But SADC can never accomplish a mission if either South Africa, Botswana, or Angola are not involved. So if you don't get one of the three players involved, they can't pull it off. And this time, South Africa's involved. So I don't really know what the purpose of it was or why they're there. I see no gain for ordinary South Africans. If you live in Alexandria, if you live in Kempton Park, if you live, I don't know, in Clifton, if you live in the Cape Flats, I see nothing for you in this. And I see nothing in this for South African soldiers, and I feel for them.
Well, meanwhile, the rebels seem to be in a more powerful position than ever before. And there are fears that there is a war brewing between Rwanda and the DRC. I don't know if you agree with that, Chris, that it's likely.
Well, arguably, there's been a war with Rwanda and the DRC since the 1990s. Kagame has been supporting rebels in the Eastern Congo for decades and getting away with it. And there were times that rebels slide back and forth. And of course, the whole reason for Kagame being involved in the DRC ostensibly is because they chased the genocidaires into the DRC in 1994. And that's true. That did happen. However, he's been sticking his nose in the business there for a long time. Not exactly a Democrat or, you know, a magnanimous leader or a benign leader. This is a man who just won re-election with 99.97% of the vote. Wow, I'll tell you what, I'd like those odds. Let me run for president of Rwanda. That's pretty good. It's a country that a lot of people hold up as an example of doing very well because it's orderly, it's clean. It's a place you can do business legitimately without massive corruption. And there aren't a lot of places like that, unfortunately, across the continent of Africa. So it's held up as a shining star in many respects. But when it comes to democracy, liberty, and freedoms, that's not Rwanda. And a lot of people recognize that. Kagame's welcome has been wearing thin for a decade. It's getting increasingly thin here on this side of the Atlantic as people see him for the authoritarian ruler that he is. But you know what? In Africa and in many places around the world, people are okay with authoritarians. As long as the streets are clean, they have water, they can feed their families, they like authoritarians. And many Rwandans love Paul Kagame. And to be fair to the man, he and his guerrilla movement are the ones that overthrew the genocidaires and ended the horrific situation because the world sat by and watched. I remember that. I was on alert orders to go to Rwanda as the genocide was occurring. And we were stopped going by the Clinton administration because they were worried that it would, if it was declared a genocide, what would it do for the midterm elections? Shameful people. Kagame is involved. Arguably, they're in the war. Just because there aren't Rwandan troops across the border today doesn't mean they're not part of the war. Just like America's involved in Ukraine. We're in the Ukraine war. There may not be American troops there, but over $200 billion of American treasure has gone there.
Judging by Kagame's landslide victory, he's even much more popular than his own party. And he has seemed to have been able to get the best of both worlds. He defies the West when it comes to the DRC, but he maintains the support of the West. How does the US view him? You say the support is waning a little on that side.
Well, for a number of years, Kagame was viewed in a very good light in the foreign policy establishment and the military national security folks here in the U.S., not just in the U.S., but also in Western Europe as well, and through many corners of Africa, because they ended the genocide, they had elections, they held their equivalent of a truth and reconciliation commission with their local trials, which for the most part weren't simply revenge trials. They actually tried people on a legitimate basis in these local community trials. So that's an example for the world to look at, and it seemed like they're on the right path. A lot of reasonable policies were put in place that were pro-business, a reform, corruption was rooted out. Corrupt officials were actually prosecuted and incarcerated for their actions. So Rwanda was kind of the darling for a while, but we could see not too long after they took over, just like Uganda, that things were not going to go great. It's big man politics, and that's why his welcome mat is wearing thin here in the United States. But the problem is with so much conflict, so much chaos in that part of Africa, any stability gets rewarded. And he got rewarded for his what appeared to be pro-democratic stance and for his pro-free market capitalism, by and large. That really went over well for a long time. We saw the same thing with Yoweri Museveni, who came to power in 1986, by the way, with the help of Paul Kagame, who was part of the Ugandan rebels. People forget that. If you go to their engineer base in the southwest part of the country, which is the home area of Yoweri Museveni, you'll find a statue. And on that statue, dedicated to the fighters who led an abortive attack in which only, I think, three of them had firearms, they attacked an army base as rebels. It was, of course, Yoweri Museveni who led that mission, and Paul Kagame was his intelligence guy right there with him. So both of them got a free pass, but that all started to wear thin when Obama was president, ironically. America's first African-American president. Obama got into a contest with Yoweri Museveni over a homosexuality law, which exploded, and the relationship between the U.S. and Museveni was poisoned and has never recovered with Uganda. Kagame's sitting in a boat now where he's, not because of homosexuality legislation, but because of the continuing conflict and this implausible 99% victory, that a lot of people are beginning to question why we're supporting him at all. And so that welcome mat is wearing thin. I don't know how much longer it'll last. But to be honest, you know, when the world's on fire and one place isn't, sometimes that's enough just to get you the support that you need.
Thank you. That was retired Colonel Chris Wyatt speaking to Biz News about the SA NDF involvement in the DRC, where almost a dozen soldiers have died this year. Thank you, Colonel. I'm Christine.